You're on 98.7 FM, Your Story Counts with Nan and Simone, and we're heading for a sunny top of 14 degrees, and in the studio we have...
Kat Dunn.
Yay, woo! Welcome.
Hey guys, thanks for having me.
Now, so excited.
You've come all this way to talk to us from Sydney.
From sunny Sydney.
You've flown in for Your Story Counts.
It was this important. Yeah. You guys are that awesome.
We love that. Thank you.
So are you.
So we want to get into your story. You were one of the middle children of seven.
Wow.
Is that right?
My mum. I do have a strange family, a non-conventional nuclear family, you could say.
Okay, I'm interested to find out more. What does that mean exactly?
Well, I was born in Manila in the Philippines as an only child.
Wow.
And my mum was the middle kid of seven in her family.
Right. Okay.
And they had a pretty rough time. They were like struggling financially. It's at the time there's like 70 million people in the Philippines. It's really tough to get ahead. And so she made some pretty challenging choices. She was at university studying law. She was about 27, 28.
Oh, wow.
But it's different though. Over there, you can study a degree, but then it's so hard to get a job, and you often find people who are like engineers that are janitors. And it's like next level tough.
Yeah.
And she met my dad. My dad was a crop duster. He was flying for a long time, and he grew up from a pretty kind of challenging family as well. Like, they struggled throughout his childhood. He was born in the 1920s in Rainbow in Victoria, where we are.
Yeah, yeah.
And he was in the Philippines buying an aircraft for his business. So he worked himself up to own a business, and he met my mum, and she made the tough choice of leaving her whole family, the language she knew, to come over to Australia and live with him.
How
and,
courageous
and bring me.
Yeah,
she's a pretty tough cookie.
Mm.
And I didn't really appreciate this at the time though, like how much your parents kind of go through to give you a good life. But I was lucky enough to grow up for the majority of my life in the beautiful country town in Western Australia called Geraldton.
Oh, you're a son of that place.
Yep. Yeah, have you been there?
Yeah.
Oh, it's wicked. It's like, it's about 30,000 people. You know, main industries are crayfishing and mining services. And I was the little Asian girl in this country town in Western Australia in the 90s.
Wow.
That was a weird time.
You would have learned some good skills, I would imagine.
Yeah, some survival skills. Yes.
Yeah.
So was it an inclusive sort of accepting culture, or was it quite difficult for you?
It was, I have to say, it was a bit of both. I feel like my upbringing is kind of a tangle between two worlds. One, which is this really gorgeous, beautiful, inclusive, lovely, friendly country town. And then the kind of darker side of, I guess, rural Australia, right?
Yeah.
Side that when Pauline Hanson was elected in 1997, I remember this one time walking into the Woolies. I was 14 or 13. I was in high school. I walked into the Woolies with my mum. And I remember that around about the time that was all on the news, and she did her maiden speech about the Asian invasion.
Yeah.
I just remember walking in, and it was like everyone just stopped. Like, the cashiers stopped, the guys like packing the apples stopped, the shoppers stopped, and they just turned and looked at us.
Mm.
And that was a really weird feeling to have, because you kind of, it's your town, it's your community, it's your mates, but you always felt like, well, I always felt like a bit of an outsider.
So
that was kind of two conflicting things, where you really love it, but you also feel a bit kind of scared and left out.
Yeah, for sure. And you hung out with your nieces and nephews a little bit though. So you did you have a little bit of protection there?
I did. That was one of the things, right? Like my dad's Aussie Scottish of heritage. So he's my stepdad, and he passed away earlier this year. So that's why I refer to him in past tense. But he had a really rollickingly awesome life. And he had five kids from his first marriage, my brothers and sisters, and they're all like blonde-haired, blue-eyed, Aryan surfies. And so that was like the culture that I was really kind of accustomed to. And their nieces and nephews were my age. So when we were kids, we got introduced to each other as cousins, because it was weird enough. Like, I didn't look like them, let alone the sort of intergenerational kind of difference. But we grew up a pretty tight-knit family, notwithstanding how challenging it sometimes was growing up in country WA.
Mm-hmm. So what age were you when you came across here?
I went to school in Geraldton and Perth and did university there.
Okay.
And growing up, I guess one of the positives was I knew pretty early on that I was academically strong. So you can imagine those two, like the smart Asian girl. Yeah. I had a pretty awesome time at school. super popular. because I kind of knew that I was a bit of an outsider, like being strong academically and kind of being good at school. Mm. I thought that was a way to distinguish myself in a positive way. Mm. And because I kind of decided, well, that was my path, I studied really hard, got into law school, assumed a bunch of leadership positions, and then was lucky enough to get summer clerkships or internships at firms in Sydney, in corporate Sydney, 10 years ago.
Wow. And what sort of made you want to become a lawyer?
You know what? It's really not that exciting. There wasn't any grand design to this.
When you were a little kid, you didn't say, I want to become a lawyer or anything.
It was more when your family's had it tough, they sometimes have really big kind of plans for you. And so my mum and dad were basically because they didn't go to university and whatnot, they basically said, look, you're either a lawyer, a doctor, or an engineer. So in many ways, my kind of life path was set for me. And this is kind of how I...
The pressure and expectation.
Massive pressure, but also kind of rose to the challenge. But when you're a kid, you don't know any better. You're an only child. You kind of just... you're told there's one path to success and you believe it because you don't have any other
reason not to.
Information, right?
And you didn't have any social media back then to know what the
difference is. Didn't. You didn't have social media back then. And in many ways it really wasn't that accepted or approved of to do wacky things with your career. Yeah. There was a real desire to play it safe, right? Play it safe, get a good job, be
perfect
secure.
Perfect job.
Totally. Yeah.
And you did that.
Yeah. Tick that box.
And I was great at ticking boxes. And it's not as awesome as it sounds, right? Because it can be pretty oppressive when you're living up to other people's expectations.
Dreams. And dreams. Other people's dreams.
Other people's dreams. Yeah. Exactly. Mm.
Yeah. Wow, that's amazing.
So you got to a point, though, that you were fund manager. Is that right? Yeah? You were a listed fund manager? And
yeah.
How long ago was that you decided to sort of move from that kind of world?
Well, when I became a lawyer, it was so funny. It's not like you expect at all, and certainly not for me. I thought it was going to be, once you'd got there, no one actually told me that life happens after you finish school. you kind of think that it's just going to be steady and what an idiot. I had no idea.
So it wasn't LA law or anything like that.
Oh, no way, man. It was not for me anyway. I was a corporate lawyer for some time and I realised that the part of the work that I enjoyed was the business side. So the hours were super long and that was cool for me because I was really ambitious and I wanted to get ahead. And then over time I realised I'm pulling 18-hour days, I'm, working on the weekends, I'm not seeing my friends, and it's all is this really what I work so hard for? And when I was a kid, I kind of, I felt like I was well-rounded, I had diverse interests, but then I went to, I became a lawyer, and then it became really clear to me that there was only one thing you could do with your time, and that was work if you wanted to get promoted. And in my head, I just couldn't reconcile that.
Yeah.
And so I was like, well, how do I get into business? And I was really lucky. A girlfriend of mine was a lawyer at a listed fund manager, and she went on leave and said, look, you should take my job. And I got in, ended up working there for 3 months before I got promoted to a commercial role. I was leading global hedge fund transactions out of Sydney, and then kind of got recognised by the senior leadership team and really rapidly got promoted to the senior leadership team of this listed fund manager at 32, having never done any kind of strategic work in my life. And so at that time, even though you do well, I had massive imposter syndrome, because it was like this country girl from WA who should have been brought up in the Philippines, like one of 100 million people, is now in charge of this massive budget at a fund manager leading innovation and strategy. I was thinking to myself, how did I get here? This shouldn't be my life. And this
is someone else's life. Yeah, it was a bit like that. You sort of fell into it, hey? It was like a tumbleweed.
You just sort of kept rolling and kept rolling, and there you were.
It was a bit like that. And it was the consistent kind of theme was like a feeling of lack of belonging, because there's the outside world that looks at you and they go, you've got a wicked life. And then on the inside, you're like, but I never really feel like I fit in anywhere.
Yeah, and fulfilled.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Wow. That is so cool.
Hey, let's try one more of your songs. So this is Forever Young, Youth Group. So here
Love
we go.
This song. Forever Young, Youth Group. You're on 98.7 Your Story Counts with Nan and Simone.
We're sitting here and we're chatting with Kat Dunn, who's zipped down from Sydney to natter with us today. And it's wonderful talking to you. Now, we've just sort of been listening to the beginning of your story, which was that you're born in Manila in the Philippines. Your wonderful mum. I mean, all these incredible mums.
I know.
You know, every story you hear about this powerful woman that has sacrificed so much for their children. And your mum sort of met your dad, and then you basically found yourself at two across at Western Australia. Australia, a little country town. Mm-hmm. Obviously brilliant academically, which was wonderful. Just, you know, your course was already set. You were going to be either a doctor, a lawyer, or an engineer. And that was, and that's exactly what you did. You became a very successful lawyer and even was accepted, you know, as a solicitor barrister for the High Court. So what an incredible effort. Mm. And, you know, I mean, there is a lot of study and, do you know what I mean,
and commitment,
commitment required to get to that level. That doesn't just happen.
No, I wish
that
doesn't, it did. I know. I'm really disappointed.
it doesn't just fall in your lap. But then you found yourself moving the corporate ladder, and you found yourself walking up, I guess, that ladder very quickly, and found yourself in the arena of fund management and dealing with huge amounts of money. Hard part about all this was it wasn't actually your calling.
No, that's it, right? When you're when I was a kid, I just wanted to, I guess, the belonging piece and the wanting to fit in piece. It really it impacted my journeys, because I guess coming over to Australia at 2 years old, being in a country town, feeling like one of the kids, but feeling a little bit excluded, you just wanted to find that belonging. And I thought that if I got the approval of my parents, my society, you know, teachers,
that would be like enough.
That, you know, then maybe I'd have that sense of fitting in. And the way I expressed that was through my work. Mm-hmm. And so I'd climb up the corporate ladder. And the way that you do that is by conforming, right? Like, you know, just doing really good at what you're told to do and not going outside of that and, you know, plugging away. And I thought, you know, maybe and I had this feeling that it wasn't for me from the start, but I thought maybe I didn't have all the information. Mm. And then I got to that really senior level and I looked around and I went, wait, this really like isn't what I signed up for. Mm. You know, as much as it was a prestigious job, high status, good money, lots of security, I found myself feeling like this cognitive dissonance, a real mismatch between my internal values and how I got to do that at work.
Yeah, incongruency.
Totally. And I felt like, you know, not all businesses are like that. And in many ways, that was a great business as well. But I think there's such a focus on selfishness and greed and how much more money can we take home for ourselves rather than thinking about how as a business do we have a responsibility to our clients and the environment around us.
Yeah, social responsibility.
Totally.
Yeah.
Like lots of companies talk about it, but I don't know that they actually believe what they're saying.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, I got to a point where I was like, look, I just can't really kind of be fake anymore and go down this path when I know that it's just incongruent with my values.
Yeah.
And I did it for 10 years, by the way, so I'm no saint. Yeah. Like, it took me a long time to kind of man up, right? Mm. I was really afraid of changing course, because what would that mean for that approval and belonging? Like, in many ways it's kind of confounds expectations, and you get a lot of judgment for going away from a safe, secure path to do your own thing.
Because you're so successful at it.
So
much judgment around that from other people.
Well, it's so funny though, because the idea of success, externally you get approval and there's this idea of success externally, but internally I didn't feel successful. I felt like I was an imposter and I felt actually really unsuccessful because I didn't have the guts to go and do what was right
because
I was afraid. Right for me, because I was afraid what people would think.
Walk us through, I guess, the months that led up to you saying, right, I'm leaping out of my safety, you know, my safety net.
Did you go and talk to your parents?
Yeah, what sort of process did you go through before you just sort of, you know, put the last nail in the coffin and said, right, that's me, done. I'm now going to move into who I really am.
Yeah, I was in charge of leading the innovation capability of this organization. We called it continuous improvement, but same thing. And you're asked to do new things. And this is not just in that business, but in many businesses around the country. You often find there's a mismatch between what they say and what they do. They ask you to innovate, but then they're afraid of taking risks.
So when there's
these constraints, it's almost like you're forced into innovation theatre, where it's more exactly. It's more important to look like you're doing something new than actually do something new. Because what happens if you try something new and you fail? There's this real aversion to failure in the organization, and I recognized that there was a fear of failure in the organization, in myself, and the more I thought about it, the more I saw it everywhere. And it got to a point where I realized that was the thing that was holding me back. And so I just, once that thought entered my head, it took me about 2 days to decide I was going to book in a meeting with my manager.
2 days.
Yeah. 48 hours. Yeah. Done. Yeah.
I am very efficient. And I booked in a meeting with my manager, the group executive, and I remember her walking in with like a monetary sort of incentive for me. And I cut her off before she started to talk, and I said, I'm resigning. And that was, it was a real shock to them because, you know, they had treated me so well and I'd got so much of the organization. It was really wonderful. But I had reached a point in my life where
no return.
Our paths were now not on the same trajectory.
On the same track. Yep.
So I quit my job and I didn't have anything to go to. I didn't know what I was going to do next. And
that
was really
that?
Terrifying, right, to some people and to me. But I knew that whatever happened next would be more right than me trying to pretend I was somebody I wasn't and fit into a box that wasn't really, consistent with my values.
And we were around 33 then?
Yeah, I was 33.
See, I'm telling you, 33, you go back to any time of life, 33 is where life changes.
There you go.
Dramatically. Something really significant happens.
Yeah, I think you're building up to your 7-year cycle, 35. So you're getting all your cannons aligned. So by the time you're 35, do you know what I mean? You've got your wings open.
Yeah. But 33 is like something major happens.
Where it's done.
Yeah, it pops into your mind and 2 days later, bang.
How cool is that? Love it.
So then what happened? So you found, did you meet Justin Brown somewhere at a conference or how did you guys connect?
So at the time I was launching a big event called the Potential Symposium because I really wanted to explore the organization's potential, my potential and the potential of everyone around us that I could see being unleashed. And one of the speakers was a man called Dr. Alan DuPont.
Yep.
And it turns out that he's an investor in this company called Ideapod. And he found out that I was going, and I styled it as sabbatical, like an entrepreneurship, creative, philosophical sabbatical. Like, you know, all of the words because I was, you know, having this existential crisis. And he said, maybe you should meet the CEO of this company I'm invested in called Ideapod. His name is Justin Brown. He's currently in the US. Maybe he can, give you some pointers. And what started off as one Skype call with Justin when he was actually in Bangkok ended up being a number of weekly Skype calls where we realized we had a more than just a friendship, but a connection where we could do business
together.
Synergy. A real synergy. And what was interesting is and you asked Nan, like, what was the lead up to you deciding to go on a different path? The months before, I really had this sense inside me that I've learned so much through corporate and I've got this great discipline and structure. What would be really amazing is to be able to help a startup or a smaller business kind of scale and grow by using my skills as like a chief operating officer. I just like threw that away in my mind. I was like, maybe that's something that I could be really good at. I just felt like that was something I could do. And then Justin and I, after a few months, were talking and he said, well, you know, why don't you join Ideapod? Let's see how it goes. In a kind of like a test capacity, we did a few deals together and we had a conversation. I flew to Bangkok. We talked about my permanency at the company and he was like, why don't you join us as the chief operating officer? And so in my mind, I thought that that was something I would be suited to. And a few months later, it sort of happened when I made that call to follow the new path instead of insisting on going down the old one. And that's how our partnership was birthed.
Fantastic. So well, let's play one more song. Don't Stop Believing, Journey. I love it. That's so appropriate right now.
Don't Stop Believing, Journey. You're on 98.7 Your Story Counts with Nan and Simone, and we're heading for a sunny top of 14 degrees.
Well, there you go. Hey, Kat Dunn. So we've been nattering about your story and we've talked about the fact that you've come, you know, a long way from Manila. You left there when you were two and you came across to Australia, country town, but obviously has created such amazing success for yourself. When you're about 33, in 48 hours, you decided, okay, I'm done with, you know, that trajectory towards that ladder, that corporate ladder, into becoming an entrepreneur and really making a difference to how people think in the world.
Yeah.
And you met Justin Brown, obviously, with Ideapod a couple of years ago. And or was it 12 months ago? Was it a year or two, a couple of years ago?
7 months, actually. It feels like
really? It feels years. Such a long time.
Yeah, met 7 months ago and over Skype, actually. Mm. We met on the internet.
Wow, yeah. Which is appropriate, really.
We won't go there. Yeah. For sure. And now, obviously, heavily involved as CEO of Ideapod, but also running your own FOF. You're the founder of FOF as well. So tell us more for people who have never heard of Ideapod. What's the foundation of this concept?
So an idea is, ideas are so powerful. Ideas are the only thing that have ever really shifted civilizations into the future. And the real power of an idea is not when it's stuck inside your head or an academic's or an expert's head, but when it's shared and other people can really talk about it and turn it into something that's a game-changing concept. An Ideapod has started out as an idea sharing platform, the social network to share your ideas. Because originally when Justin launched it, there wasn't really anywhere on the internet you could share an idea easily. Facebook was about your social life.
Yeah.
Instagram was about pictures. LinkedIn was for your professional life. And there wasn't really any way you could easily talk about ideas more broadly without it looking strange. And that's how Ideapod was birthed, so that people could actually share their ideas, have conversations around it, and pierce through groupthink and perhaps create something new and beautiful in the world. Mm. And we've since, because it's 4 years old now, which is relatively mature for a startup, even though it is still a startup, we've really noticed that the part of our business that we that is growing, like as in Nan, when I spoke to you in February, it was our blog, The Power of Ideas, had 450,000 monthly unique visitors. That's monthly, that's how many new people looked at the site. And since February, we've grown to 7 million.
Wow. Well,
there you go. So people are voting with their feet.
Yeah. They're voting with their eyeballs, right? And, and it's increasing really rapidly. So we've shifted from being just this idea sharing platform to really being a digital media platform for ideas.
Well, it's also a paradigm shift in a way, because in the past, people would hold on to their ideas and not want to share them.
Totally.
And now they're wanting that. This strategy is amazing.
Totally. It's
a game changer.
It is, because if you're competing for, I guess, the credit, then how are you going to ask for help to get the diversity of thinking to create your idea and turn it into reality. If you don't share it, then what's your contribution to the world? And I think that is like the paradigm shift. We're moving increasingly away from this consumption mentality where we consume and we get bigger ourselves and become wealthier, to a contribution mentality, a creation mentality, a conservation mentality, where we're really thinking about, instead of what's in it for me, it's like, how can I give back to others?
Yeah, and shifting away from that scarcity mentality.
Absolutely.
Because when you're sharing an idea, people are scared about someone's going to take my idea.
Yeah, but in fact, it more back from it. It enhances it. The idea gets bigger, it gets better, it gets shifted, and you also give back more. And so IdeaPod is the easiest place on the net to share your idea, and we're at thepowerofideas.com and ideapod.com.
That's cool. It's funny, isn't it? Because you think about the generations. You know, it wasn't that long ago where kids were only, you know, seen but not heard. And, you know, your opinion wasn't really
valued
at all.
Well, they weren't interested.
Yeah, and actually and it was considered, you know, quite rude, wasn't it, to have an opinion or have an idea, you know, as a child, as a teenager. But this new generation saying, hey, you know, we're really sponges and we want to get out there and actually change something. And not sort of be stuck in a box.
Yeah, and I think it's really shifting from that mindset of you don't have anything to say until you become senior and this really command and control hierarchical linear environment that you're more important the older and more senior you are, to a platform where actually everybody has something to offer, no matter how young, no matter how like what your socioeconomic status is, no matter what race, culture, gender you are, everybody has so much value to offer the world. There's so much potential in every person, and if you just opened your hearts and eyes to the value that other people can bring to you, the world would be such a better place. And for example, the kind of people I've met on IdeaPod will be anyone from a, you know, and you don't judge people based on external things anymore because you're talking from a place that's real. I've talked to, and I found out later because we've engaged around ideas, right? Found out later there's one person who I talked to on an IdeaPod that's just been left prison, and he said that he couldn't find anywhere to feel a sense of belonging on the internet. To a 60-year-old retiree in, you know, country Western Australia, to a single mother in California, to, you know, entrepreneur millionaires. Anyone can get together and you can connect
and share
with such diverse people. Yeah. It's beautiful.
So you're creating a voice for people.
Yeah.
And you know what? That's amazing, because that can be a real beautiful remedy, can't it, for anxiety and depression.
People want to feel heard.
We want to feel heard. Innately, we all want to be feel heard and also feel special and unique. And that, I guess, that belief system also of belonging to a particular kind of country or, you know, set of rules is starting to sort of, you know, the it's fraying around the edges, isn't it? And we're starting to see that we've got to really connect in with our own belief systems, our own talents, because that's the one place where you can always belong. No matter what's happening in your life, the one place you can always belong is to yourself. That's what IdeaPod's all about. Just love it. It's fabulous.
Absolutely. It's, you can express who you are by sharing your ideas, and the content on The Power of Ideas is quite different to what you'd see in traditional media. So we will show all sides of an idea, even the unpopular ones, because what you're seeing now is people are really rallying around this, I guess, phenomenon of echo chambers and filter bubbles that we're seeing around the world. And you saw it in the surprise when people couldn't believe that Trump happened. They couldn't believe Brexit happened. But it's obviously so many people out there have views different to maybe the mainstream, right?
Yeah.
And so how do you bridge that gap and learn what everyone else thinks, unless you kind of connect all of us?
Fabulous. Now we're just going to go to a little community announcement and we're going to be back.
It's time to chill out and enjoy racing at a different pace at this year's Relax Racing at the Mornington Racecourse, and enjoy the very best of peninsula racing. Kick back on the new summer lawn with a cool drink in hand. Book now, relax later at relaxracing.com.au, a proud station sponsor.
Across the peninsula, 98.7, 98.3, RPPFM.
You're on 98.7 FM, Your Story Counts with Nan and Simone.
Now, Kat, now what about what you're founder of, FOP? We love saying that.
Yes, I do.
Are we allowed to say that on radio? Yeah.
it means so much more than what we think, though.
I know, that's right. Yeah. So tell us a little bit more about what you're doing with that and also how that links in with IdeaPod.
Sure. So FOF stands for the Fear of Failure Forum, and it's where you can say FOF to your fear of failure. FOF is really exploring, exploring our fear of failure, why it holds us back, but importantly, offering strategies to overcome that and grow our potential. What I found really frustrating in the corporate world was there was a huge fear of failure in doing anything new, and I found that affected myself, right?
Confidence, yeah.
It affected the chances that I was willing to take and how quickly I could reach my potential. And I knew that my friends and people around me felt the same thing. And that was, when we tested that, that was verified because we launched our first FOF. It was just a pilot. So we donated all of our funds to Beyond Blue because obviously if everybody feels that many people have a fear of failure, but often don't talk about it. And so what ends up happening is it doesn't go away. You just end up suffering in isolation. So we thought, what a lovely connection to be able to launch this test event and donate the funds to Beyond Blue. So we ended up selling out. And what many people have said about FOF, and I launched this to solve my own problem. How can I overcome my fear of failure and actually pursue the things that I love instead of conforming to other people's expectations? We found that people said to us, you know, thank you so much for doing this because we've been thinking it ourselves, but we haven't been comfortable to open up and actually talk about it. And this made us feel really wonderful knowing that there's all these other successful people just like us, who are struggling. And on the outside, it might seem like everything is okay, but on the inside, everybody's got this vulnerability, this insecurity. You know, we're wondering if we're doing the right thing. And what we're realizing is that many people are craving an opportunity to talk about their fear of failure and overcome it.
Yeah, and they feel alone.
Yeah, they feel alone.
Yeah.
But also, it comes back to really building innovation capability in organizations. The only way that you can turn ideas into reality is if you push through your fear of failure and be prepared to fail and learn. Because the thing with failure is it doesn't define you.
No, it doesn't.
It's amazing.
Look at all the successful people in the world, you know?
Yeah, it's an amazing tool for growth. Yeah. And one of our strategies is to encourage people to adopt a growth mindset. Mm. Have you guys heard of this concept, this growth mindset?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. So really adopting a growth mindset and realizing that your failures don't define you and feedback only makes you better. And in fact, failure makes you smarter because you rewire your brain when you fail because you learn something new.
Mm. That's cool. Love it.
I know they say actually the best coach is the coach that's made $1 million 3 times and lost it. Do you know what I mean? Because they're so humble by the end of it. Yes. You know, once you've done that, you know, you sort of don't attach to the money and you just love it's the journey, isn't it? And the challenge.
Yep, absolutely.
Mm.
And many people are going on a journey and we're seeing it right now. There's a real narrative that people are scared of artificial intelligence, and artificial intelligence is going to do to service jobs what machinery did to industrial jobs many years ago. Mm. But of course, what that means is we're shifting away from thinking about what do I want to be when I grow up and what job do you want to have when you grow up? Well, we don't really they're shifting so quickly now. It's, we need to include this real sense of entrepreneurship in the way that we teach our kids and educate our kids and realize that the only way that you're going to learn is to overcome your fear of failure from a young age.
Wouldn't it be great if kids got that concept from a young age? Fantastic.
And that's where it's all going to go, you know, because we've got that passion there and that drive, and we're creating forums that our kids can connect with.
Absolutely.
So a lot of people are investing in your concepts and ideas. So I've heard that there's a lot of women getting behind IdeaPod as well because they can see, you know, I guess innately and intuitively that it's got to be a good thing for our future. How's all that going for you?
It's going pretty well. It's always a challenge, right? Like in startup land, you're constantly, looking for new investors. And Ideapod's been very lucky in that we've, raised investments over the past 4 years. With FOF, we're still, it's still quite new. Mm-hmm. We're launching a new event in November. It's our end of year party, mm-hmm. and we're going to have some of the greats that actually spoke at previous events join us there. But what we found is that FOF isn't just for women, and it's really tempting sometimes externally to say, because I've got two other women founders, that this is something that might only impact women, but actually
of course
it's really important for men as well to express their vulnerability,
even more so because they don't tend to communicate necessarily their vulnerabilities as well as women do,
and shifting the paradigm around that, because masculinity is very much changing in the modern world.
Sure is.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So I've got here, so there's a failure forum on the 9th of November, is that right, in Sydney?
Yes, it is.
And so tell me a little bit about that and how do you get involved in that?
So if you go to our website, f-off.org, you'll be able to see more. We haven't actually launched it, so that's a pre-launch invitation to anybody who's going to be in Sydney.
You got the scoop.
The 9th of November, it'll be a cocktail party and we'll have four amazing speakers talk about their fear of failure and how they've overcome that.
Mm-hmm.
But with Ideapod, we're launching our debut event in Sydney, and that's called Reimagine, a night for ideas, entertainment and humanity. Mm-hmm. And what we're sharing there is a real paradigm shift around what the business of the future is. Philanthropy is the new for-profit model, right? If you don't have a inherent giving back sense in your business, you're going to really struggle to be sustainable in the future. So we're exploring the fact that, in fact, the lines between business, community development, advocacy, and philanthropy are blurring, and the best businesses of the future will have all four, not just one.
Love it.
That's really cool.
So that sounds fantastic. And also Talent Exodus, what's that one? Is something else happening there?
So millennials get criticized quite a bit because there's this sense that they seek purpose in their jobs. And I remember feeling really nervous when I told people that I was leaving my corporate job to pursue more purpose, because there was thinking that it was foolish to do that. That's something you do when you're young. But what we're seeing now is I'm not the only one doing this. More and more millennials are leaving very safe, traditional corporate roles to pursue other things, whether it's in the startup world, whether it's in the not-for-profit world. And FOF is working with TalkPoint to launch something called the Talent Exodus. 67% of millennials are leaving their roles, and only 13% have said that they actually want to climb the corporate ladder in the future. So what's going on? If a corporate is interested in retaining their talent, they really need to think about shifting their values towards a more purpose-led mindset.
Wow. And so that one's on the 18th of September.
That is on Monday, the 18th of September in Sydney at Blue Chili.
Okay, fabulous. Now, we've just got a minute to go, but also through Ideapod, there's all sorts of sort of webinar kind of setups. Is that right, that you can get involved in?
That's right. We have online salons, and the best way to propose an online salon, a little bit like this podcast that we've done today with Simone and Nan, is to go to ideapod.com and use the hashtag livecast to propose a question that you want to investigate. The most recent one we did was with 37 Angels in New York, and the question, well, the proposition that we explored was, we need more women investors in order to fix Silicon Valley tech bro culture.
Okay.
Wow. Okay. Well, we have loved talking to you. Yeah. Thank you so much, Kat, for coming all the way down here. You know, you're making the world a better place.
Yes.
And we are big advocates. So anything we can do to support you,
we will.
We're always here.
Thank you so much, you guys.
It's been
really
great.
Appreciate it.
Thank you so much.